We are pleased to have with us our own Dr. Robert Weiss today. Dr. Weiss has been here at the seminary since 1992 as professor of practical pastoral ministry in the life sciences. He earned his BS degree from Eastern Illinois University and his MS and PhD from the University of Illinois, his Master of Divinity degree from here at Concordia Seminary. He served as an instructor at Kansas State in Manhattan, Kansas, and as a research associate and assistant professor at Wayne State University in Detroit. He served as a parish pastor for 10 years in Illinois, in Bunker Hill and Springfield, Illinois. And today he's going to speak on a very important topic that is more and more in the news, something that everyone's going to have to deal with, and that is the subject of cloning, selling yourself. And by the way, my secretary wants you to know she did not misspell that on the poster. Dr. Robert Weiss.
Thank you, Dean Smith, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to come and share with you some of my thoughts on this. We're going to pretty much use the information overload system. There's a lot of things to talk about, kind of what I call the plunger method. Just put it down so you can think about it and talk about it. There are two books more recently that I've been reading, getting into more studies on how we deal with these issues from a law and gospel perspective, that I think are very helpful. And as I do in class, I'm always sharing books that I think seminary students ought to be reading. One of those is, Law and Gospel in the Church and the World. It's at the bookstore, but particularly what Dr. Aaron and Dr. Price has to say regarding Dr. Aaron's paper on third use and Dr. Price's on justification, sanctification. I think it's very important to read. It's very helpful to discern these issues in that way, because people continue to be living under the law. The old Adam is just grabbing them left and right. The other one is more recent, and that is making disciples baptizing. We're going to end and conclude on this. This is a very good book because it deals with something that I'm very much tuned into regarding the area of genetics, molecular genetics, and I know Dr. Bachman as well, and that is the issue of identity. There is several companies that you can access them by dialing 1-800-IDENT, so that we get into genetic determinism and the phrase that, as I understand, Ted Peter coined, the gene made me do it. So these are two books that I would recommend that you get into and to read and to help you understand what is going on. Now, I want to get back in the beginning of time with some clonal thoughts, because I think the art of selling yourself with a C also plays into the art of selling yourself with an S, according to the old Adam. And so we're going to go back to a company that I call Clonegenics. It's a very busy morning in this cloning laboratory of a large and prominent fertility clinic called Clonegenics. As always, the list of people seeking the lab services is a long one, and it's always a varied one. And sitting quietly over in one corner is a couple from a mid-central state, and they've flown in especially, to see if the lab and the physicians that are there could make an exact copy of their 8-year-old son who is in a permanent vegetative state. That simply means he's been that way for longer than 12 months, and there is no opportunity, as the physicians say, for reversal of circulation, respiration, and any brain activity. He is pretty much isoelectric. Death is imminent. The attending physicians have placed him on a ventilator. They have told the parents that he will die very soon, perhaps within a matter of days. This Christian couple is asking the physicians at Clonegenics to scrape off some skin cells, to freeze them so that later they may clone them so that they will have a clone son that is genotypically and phenotypically identical to the son who is dying. On February 22nd, a previously obscure 52-year-old Scottish embryologist, Dr. Ian Wilmot, stunned the world by announcing that he and his team at Roslin Institute, outside Edinburgh, created an exact copy, a clone, of an adult Dorset sheep. The historic lamb, created from DNA extracted from the mammary gland of a 6-year-old Dorset sheep, this lamb that was cloned was called Dolly. The picture you see up there is Dolly with her surrogate mother. From this point on, no clone would be literally unturned in the quest for the real possibilities. Can we do this with humans? What are the benefits of adult human cloning, if any? And will the tenets of Lutheran theology, especially the theology of the cross, redound to the true meaning of human life and our identity as Christians, purchased and won not by some Christological DNA, but with Christ's holy, innocent suffering and death? So this cloning and theological agenda began in earnest, however, way back in 1966. This was nothing new, and it kind of got Fletcher, with some of his Fletcheristic comments, and Ramsey started on this debate regarding adult human cloning. Nobel laureate Joshua Lederberg wrote an essay entitled Experimental Genetics and Human Evolution, and this was published in the American Naturalist. Lederberg wrote, "Man is indeed on the brink of a major evolutionary perturbation. But this is not just simply genetics, but vegetative propagation. If a superior individual, and presumably then genotype, is identified, why not copy it directly, rather than suffer all the risk of recombinational disruption, including those of sex? Tempered clonality could allow the best of both worlds. We could at least enjoy being able to observe the experiment of discovering whether a second Einstein could outdo the first one. How to temper the process and the accompanying social frictions is another problem," end of quote. Well, this article was responded to in a debate by Fletcher and Paul Ramsey in the very early 1970s, and they wrote articles on that I'll refer to in a minute. And their debate over Lederberg's paper is significant today, because they are discussing this nuclear transplantation of taking DNA out of a somatic cell and putting it into an enucleated egg, and then putting that into a surrogate womb. This is taking all of these things into consideration. The issues that they posited, they still remain very viable today and are discussed. And these have been reflected in writings that I'm familiar with, and many of you, by Dr. Gilbert Mylander, Alan Verhey, Norman Geisler, and the list goes on, for all of these theologians who are champion procreation between a husband and a wife, not within themselves. Well, Fletcher and Ramsey discussed the areas, as you see up there, regarding freedom. And Fletcher was dealing with this, certainly in his later years, was very utilitarian. Ramsey would say, no, we have to take a look at the identity of the child. Let's not deal with, is it going to give you pleasure to clone a child? They would deal with good and evil. What about the issue of good and evil? Well, and again, back to Fletcher's utilitarian approach, this would be a good thing to do. And Ramsey would counter and say, no, it's not a good thing to do. The issue of embodiment, where Fletcher would separate the body from the person, and Ramsey would say, no separation. The issue of relationship with nature, Fletcher would say, hey, Bible says mastery, so let's master it. And cloning is one of those ways. Ramsey would say, no, technology isn't always necessarily given as a master, but in service to God's word. And then lastly, the meaning of being a parent. And Fletcher would say, hey, this is also a social relationship. The biological issues are trivial, not really to be counted into the circumstances. And Ramsey would say, it's not trivia who the parent is, our parents. So while time really doesn't permit to go into any more of this, Fletcher's article was entitled Ethical Aspects of Genetic Controls, and that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1971, and Paul Ramsey's comments that you can still read in a couple of books that are out of print, The Patient as Person, Explorations in Medical Ethics from Yale University, and a very excellent book called Fabricated Man, The Ethics of Genetics, also from Yale. Well, essentially, Fletcher believed that the body belongs in the realm of objects, to be measured and mastered and manipulated for the sake of personal choices. He claimed that laboratory reproduction, including cloning, is radically human compared to conception by ordinary heterosexual intercourse. Ramsey, however, believed that children are gifts from the Lord, the giver, and not products. Unlike Fletcher, Ramsey rejected the separation of body and person as a Cartesian dualism. Because Ramsey refused to locate the person in thought or freedom alone, he refused to reduce lovemaking or baby-making, as he says, to a technical accomplishment as a matter of a contract between two individuals. Ramsey worried that if we see children as achievements, as products, then quality control may gradually reduce our options to those of a perfect child or a dead child that we want to clone, and diminish our capacity as parents for the sort of uncalculating care and nurturing that can evoke their trust in children. So these cloning debates, they began back in a time when molecular genetics, from my perspective, was really at its high point, where they were recombinating DNA, they were cloning small pieces of DNA. When I was at Wayne State Medical School, we had a recombination lab where these guys are walking in these suits, much like you see in some movies these days. To date, the questions and the issues that Fletcher and Ramsey and Lederberg investigated and posited, they do remain central in a theological approach to the question, what it is that we would do, and if we do it, what would we do with it? It was not science against theology, but reactive theology attempting to frame the debate on adult human cloning around the meaning of human life embodied in the Creator, the Giver. Little did Fletcher and Ramsey, from my perspective, as I read, know as they responded to Lederberg, and Lederberg never thought that this would be possible, although maybe, that the Lamb of the Mary, who had a little lamb, would be born and then would Mary follow. So from all of this, when all of these things happened in the sense of how the science of cloning came about, we certainly learn from Weird Al Yankovic's parody of the song that Tommy James and the Shondells made millions on when they said, "I think we're alone now," and he came out and said, "I think we're a clone now." In 1970, the book, Future Shock, Alvin Toffler speculated that cloning would make it possible for people to see themselves anew, to fill the world with twins of themselves. Huxley's Brave New World had already posited this in his futuristic book, Look at a World Created and Filled with Clones, more than 61 years ago. And then, of course, there was Woody Allen's movie, 1973, Sleeper, involved a futuristic world whose leader had left behind his nose for purposes of cloning. And then there was Ben Bonova's novel, Multiple Man, in 1976, wherein several exact copies of the United States president are found dead, and no one is certain whether a clone or the real McCoy sits in the Oval Office, and we still wonder today. In Nancy Friedman's 1973 book, Joshua, Son of Nun, N-O-N-E, the clone is a real president, John F. Kennedy. The 1999 British TV miniseries, The Cloning of Joanna May, based on Faye Weldon's novel, is about a man who dumps his unfaithful wife, but only after cloning her so that he can replace her with her twin a few years down the line. And then, of course, in 1978, a rather bizarre telling movie, Boys from Brazil, by Iron Levine, in his novel where he cloned 94 Hitlers from pectoral muscle cells. And then the latest movie, Multiplicity, and you can go to any video store and find countless more on this. And then we wonder why people say, "What is going on?" or, "Oh, isn't this cool?" Especially the younger ones in your parishes. So cloning, as we understand, the very basic way, is not twinning. And twinning is not cloning. One thing that we know when we take a look at what happens up here, if we go to the top, and we want to take a look at the very top, is the science of scrambling an egg. That's twinning. This is what the molecular geneticists at the University of Washington did back in 1993, and everybody said, oh, it's a clone. Well, not exactly. They just took some eggs, fertilized egg, embryos, two-cell embryos. I'm not a big fan of this word pre-embryo. An amphibian embryologist came up with that, Grobstein. These are embryos. And they took off the zona pellucida, a very thick covering around this fertilized egg, split it in two, reformed the zona pellucida there where each cell is, and then they grew. But they didn't grow very far because these were cells that were defective. Okay? Now understand what I just said. Cells that were defective. Now, if you happen to believe that this right here, this fertilized egg, is a human, then you have them working with people who are defective. And so they twin. This is twinning. Now, if we go down here, if we could raise that and take a look at what happened to Dolly with the time that she was put into the surrogate womb and 5 months later was born, it's not that complicated in terms of talking about it. But you have to keep in mind we're going to be using three adult sheep along the way here. And the first one, of course, is the donor sheep. They take mammary cells. And they took these mammary cells and they set them into a fluid, into a culture that starved them because they were activated to produce mammary cells. I mean, you can take cheek cells out of your mouth and you brush your teeth, you lose millions of them, and the cheek cells get together and say, oh my goodness, Weiss just brushed his teeth. Harry, what are we going to do? Well, let's make some more cheek cells. Everything is there to make another armpit, another nose, another whatever. But they don't. This is how the Lord's put the body together. Fearfully and wonderfully made. And so they take these cells and they starve them. And then after they starved these cells, they went ahead and took some eggs, unfertilized eggs, out of another sheep, Dorset sheep, and they removed the nucleus, the genetic material. So you have an enucleated egg. There's nothing in it except what's called mitochondrial DNA. That's all you have in it. Because they're going to take this and plunk it into this 277 times. Nothing magic about the number. And that's what they did here. They take this cell from here, put it next to this enucleated egg, give it a little shot of electricity, like in Frankenstein, and because of the bipolar nature of the cell membrane, it opens up and receives this particular nucleus with the DNA from the mammary gland. It's unactivated. Doesn't know what it should be, except when it gets in the egg and all of the fluid that's in the egg of a very young egg, it says, oh, I'm a fertilized egg. And it develops. And it develops, it's transferred to a surrogate, the third. This is a surrogate. And then in 5 months, you had Dolly born. They put in 29. 29 made it to the point where they could implant. They had approximately three, four sheep that were born, but they were born with severe deformities. Severe. Missing kidneys, missing legs, just very severe. Dolly was the only one out of 277 that quote-unquote made it. A terribly inefficient system, cloning, in this context. What is more important to keep in mind is this area in here when they deactivated it. This is what is so problematic in the area of cloning. Not all of them were deactivated, and they do not know, nor have they figured out how to ascertain, are they completely deactivated? This is very, very problematic because you don't know. Now, they're not, you know, people say, well, 201 out of 277, that's not statistically significant, so why worry about it? Well, they used about 200 embryos when they Steptoe and Edwards in England, in the test tube, you had Louise Brown. You see, you're not that far away when the average percent of in vitro fertilization, depending on whom you speak with, between 25, maybe 35%, Ian Sherman Silver out here claims 50% success rate of in vitro at St. Luke's West. But even at 25%, you're 25% away. So that's the whole process, and the process remains the same if we're going to do adult human cloning. Take a skin cell, take a cheek cell, take a hair cell, take a mammary cell from a man or a woman. If you have a mammary cell from a man or a skin cell, it will be a man. If you take one from the woman, it will be a woman. This is asexual reproduction. sperm is not involved. So, we understand then about this whole issue of cloning from our perspective. And from the theological, we have, you know, I hear more and more about this issue of manipulation. You know, playing God. We hear that phrase a lot. I think it's a bit overused. I prefer what Paul writes about mimetai in Ephesians, to mimic, to imitate. We can address that issue that way. And so from the world of science, it's very exciting. It's very interesting to see this. But we are not in the business of letting science drive our theology. But it's not an enemy by any stretch of the imagination. So this issue will continue. Hopefully we will not be building ourselves golden lambs, but this issue will continue to address our relationship with the Lord God and the cross of Jesus Christ and the meaning of human life. That's where it's at. And this pursuit for the meaning of human life and the so-called yuck factor about cloning within the world, it really has provided the gatekeepers of society to respond with a plethora of articles on Dolly and her meaning and implication to futuristic possibilities of adult human cloning. And some of those I just want to share with you. Some of these articles came right out of the newspapers. These are things that all the way down, accident, Belgian doctor says, first human, well, they found out that was a big hoax. But he got a lot of press, and he got some money. So there you have it. If we could go to the next one, please. These are just some more headlines. With cloning of a sheep, the ethical ground shift, scientists succeed in cloning, and then the bioethics panel will study cloning issues. And we'll chat a little bit about that in a minute. Can we go to the next one, please? And here are some more titles that they jumped on. At the very bottom one, how great a threat are clones? At a voters meeting, probably helpful. Next slide, please. So this particular one came out with Dolly and her mother. You're not going to be able to tell the difference, but you have Hello Dolly. The next one, please. And you have the same thing. You know, will there be, at the very bottom here, if we could raise that up, another U, but that's Y-O-U, not E-W-E. Next one, please. And here you have, I owe Bob Rosin, he pointed this out to me at the newsstand, where you have Einstein, Zweistein, Dreistein, and Feierstein. Next slide, please. Then Biotech Century came out with clonings. It's just the beginning. And they have all kinds of things of what we could do. Next slide, please. And then Der Spiegel, they came out about the science of cloning towards human, and then at the bottom there, Der Sündenfall, about something, you know, the fall after grace is a tough one to deal with, but when you open it up to the main article, they say now everything is possible. Next slide, please. And can we clone humans? So, out of this, can we clone humans? More pictures were generated. Next slide, please. He's having fun. Look at this. We got bubblegum machine clones. And this is how people were depicting this. I mean, here you are. Just pump right down there. Put your money in. Cost-effective cloning. Next, please. Coming out of the test tube, this is almost similar to the old homunculus that was proposed years ago, that the human being was in the head of the sperm. And here you have clones just popping out of test tubes. It's not a problem. Next slide, please. And here you have already fluffy, 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 and fluffy. There are people that are, they are saving animal cells for cloning. And by the way, even morticians, mortuary scientists, people are paying big bucks to have their skin cells frozen for cloning later on. This is where we're at. Next, please. And then we have cartoons came out. They were all kinds of puns about you again. Way down here, if we could raise it way up to the top, this says, hey, what you reading? Well, some crazy article about cloning. So he's reading it, comes by, hey, what you reading? Next, please. And then he had the pundits on abortion and connecting this again with cloning. You can read this. You shouldn't play God. Human creation is a matter of morality and spirituality. Each human life is unique. This is a quote from President Clinton. But, Mr. President, we're not cloners, we're abortionists. Oh, good. Good job, men. Carry on. And this is what was being published. And then, of course, to raise that up a little, please, you had this, well, why all the excitement about I've been cloned for years? Now, I'm not just picking on, but this is where the political people were coming from. Everybody was tapping into this. So why did these headlines, what did these headlines say, and what was their biggest concern, if any? Obviously, they were headlines that supported it from the standpoint of, let's not say no to it, let's see at least what good can come from it. And those that did, some of them did not support it, though, and those that were written by Lutherans, they said, what does this mean? In general, the majority of articles approached the issue of adult human cloning in a fairly objective way, raising all kinds of questions. They presented the possible benefits for drug and gene replacement therapy to the actual cloning of a human. The latter seemed to pose the greatest controversy among the writers, while they all seemed to say no. They also, in the same breath, in a clone-trolled breathing, said, that went over their head, let's not put the damper on this yet. For example, Lisa Krieger of the Washington Times closed her so-called objective article on adult human cloning by saying, cloning is far more than just a new technological tool. It could offer a clear comprehension of nature, teaching us more about ourselves, where we came from, what we are here for, and who we are. William Rusher says, in a title, A Place for the Clones to Come, in his conclusion, said this, the biggest nuances will probably be those self-infatuated individuals who now pay to themselves, frozen and shelved, when they die, in the hope that they can be revived on some happy day when whatever killed them can be cured. Some people will probably regard cloning as their passport to genetic immortality. Let's hope their clones have or manage to acquire more sense. Well, all of these areas deal with a lot of things that people consider to be godlike interventions. They certainly demonstrate that we have come a long, long way in the very short time since the first test tube baby, 1978, Louise Brown, from the biblical teaching that a child is a gift given by the giver, and from this phrase, for this reason, which for some reason tends to be overlooked all the time, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. As the woman was God's gift to man, and he created Eve, he brought Eve to Adam. So it is the child is procreated in the giving and the sharing of love of a husband and a wife, or adopted through the mutual consent of each parent's love for a child who has been abandoned and needs family. Regardless of while many are fascinated by the possibilities of seeing a clone and realize that our humanity has conquered almost another height, many countries have banned adult human cloning, but not plant or animal cloning, nor the use of human genes in animals. And you have in the next slide just a brief list of those countries that I have knowledge of up to this point. You may know some that have been added recently. Of those countries, the United States, as usual, in its subjective role, says, well, in 3 to 5 years, we'll reevaluate to see how much benefit there will be. And I can assure you that what they are hoping in the reevaluation 3 to 5 years is that people in the United States will say, kind of relative, go ahead if you want to do it. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen, that they're providing themselves for a built-in cushion where people will kind of stay out in the Arabah and let the people do what they want to do. Go ahead and do it. The World Health Organization and the AMA, American Medical Association, they also have banned this. And so all these countries have indulged in the same reasons for banning adult cloning. In the world's mindset, it's likely to involve, as they say, unacceptable risk to the fetus or potential child, and secondly, that many of the moral issues surrounding adult human cloning, such as the moral status of the cloned embryo, its individuality, its identity, the role of parenthood, and others, need to be addressed. Naturally, the bans have little to do with the theological concerns for human life as gift and not as product to be experimented on under the guise of human procreative freedom. And so, do we have a better life through genetic engineering? And this is where they really go, no clone is unturned, where they get into all of the potential uses. And these are all listed here, the gay and lesbian, same sex, this issue, in the Der Spiegel, they had a picture of two women to demonstrate that here you have, although identical twins here, but positing the idea, certainly, if you clone one cell, they all have the same genetic component in a human, 46 chromosomes. You can just clone them and clone them, and you can have a repository like to have sperm banks. You have clone banks. Okay, we'll go back. And then clone, you know, donation to couples, money. Delayed birth of twins. Kind of have one now and one later and one over here. You kind of keep it going. Spare parts. This is something that John Robertson and other people are very much in favor of. People are in favor of this. Replace a dead child or spouse. People are in favor of that. Pharmaceutical drugs, they're doing this already. They're working in this area, especially Ian Wilmot. That's really what he's looking for, is to take human genes, especially in the area of cystic fibrosis, locate on chromosome 7, get it into a lamb, and generate pharmaceutical agents. Next, please. Age, embryo sales to childless couples, gene replacement therapy, creation of a social class called the clones. That's already been in some people. They would like to see this particular one happen, where, yeah, that's what's been posited. Bang, bang, bang. Let's go to the next slide. So all of these, and of course, the elimination of endangered species, and for those who are evolutionists, my daughter told me yesterday, her instructor in anthropology said evolution is a fact. I said, can I come and sit in on your class? She said, no. She said, Dad, stay away. Well, the scientific and theological concerns regarding the use and abuse and how they want to deal with this, the scientific concerns really farmed around the inhumane socio-physiological pressure placed that would be placed on a clone and anticipated this. And the second main concern would be the physical harm that this untested scientific method could bring to an adult clone. This is what they were trying to focus on. In terms of the theological concerns, there's a whole host. Identity based on genes and not being baptized into the death of Christ and all the blessings that are given through baptism, the ongoing fragmentation of the family and the clone's identity with family and community, the meaning of parenthood and child as both gift given by the giver, as O'Donovan and Ramsey and Mylander emphasize so very well. Fourthly, the distinction between a child and a clone. Is a clone a child? You know, what about the loss of individual uniqueness? As Art Kaplan talks about and Dan Callahan says, I think we have a right to our own individual genetic identity. I think this could well violate that right. And then, of course, the issue of playing God, and the last one on ensoulment. Would a clone have a soul? I get that question a lot. I don't think that's the most important question, however. Well, the final report of the NIH Bioethics Advisory Commission was given to the President of the United States. And that report, to sum up very quickly, they said, at this time, it is morally unacceptable for anyone in the public or private sector, whether in research or clinical setting, to attempt to create a child using somatic cell nuclear transfer cloning. But they did say, this will be reviewed 3 to 5 years to decide whether the prohibition continues to be needed. What I want to share with you now in the next few minutes is what I call the Clone Crusades, about some non-religious and religious lieutenants and how they speak out on behalf of their particular belief system that they are addressing. So cloning DNA in molecular genetics, you clone DNA, you don't clone a person. It's not fantasy, it is a reality. Cloning an adult from a skin cell is molecular genetics. It is not fantasy, it is a likely probability. The scientific and religious community continues to debate, not what will what will happen to it, but could it happen? But why should it happen? And when it happens, what will we do with the technology on a human level? And so the question remains, according to Jacques Cohen and Giles Tompkin, to clone or not to clone. Isn't that innovative? So what are some of these people saying? If we could go to the next slide about the humanist and free inquiry, what they are saying, to be quite frank, humanism holds, as you well know, that acts should be judged according to how they affect either positively or negatively the general welfare of the community. And this is bore out in the following tenets that reflect the humanist approach to self-approval of cloning through its utilitarian benefits by stressing the misconceptions posited by other religious organizations. They say cloning is playing God. Why is cloning the impermissible usurpation of God's authority, but not the use of tetracycline? Cloning is unnatural because it separates reproduction from human sexual activity, they say about other religions. Then what is natural? You support IVF, what's the problem? Cloning robs a person of their God-given uniqueness and identity and dignity. Why? Well, we're more than a product of our genes, they say. So humanists recognize the possibility of abuse, yet they say that if we master the technology, we'll be able to control it and avoid the potential harm and adult human cloning may cause. Richard Dawkins says this, "I find it personally riveting thought that I could watch a small copy of myself, 50 years younger and wearing a baseball hat instead of a solar toupee, nurtured through the early decades of the 21st century." Joseph Fletcher, The Ethics of Genetic Control, Ending Reproductive Roulette, equates the conception and virgin birth of Jesus Christ with a type of cloning, monogenesis. The Roman Church, as they testified at the National Bioethics Advisory Board, they said this, "Parents must be married to each other. Secondly, the marital act is to be performed in a morally acceptable manner, including the free consent of both spouses. Fertilization is to take place within the body of the wife. Replacement of the conjugal act is not permitted." That's where they rest their case. Cloning violates the dignity and rights of the human child so conceived and brought into the world. The Jewish perspective at this conference was given by Dr. Elliot Dorf, University of Judaism in L.A. He said this, "Teaching the technology in Jewish tradition is morally neutral. It gains moral valence depending upon what uses we put to it. So there could be very good uses. The Jewish tradition is very much into medicine. In the Jewish tradition, starting with the story of the Garden of Eden, we are put into the garden to work it and also to preserve it, and those two obligations work in tandem. So we are indeed supposed to use the environment for things that will benefit human beings, but at the same time we have to preserve the environment. It is that balance, that seems to me, that we have to strike. It seems to me, in conclusion, that," and this is at the end of his talk, "that the human cloning should be allowed, because it seems to me that once the genie is out of the bottle, you cannot really put it back again, and that if you do not, if we do not allow human cloning under some restrictions, that it will happen anyway without those restrictions." Another Jewish rabbi, Dr. Moshe Tendler from Yeshiva University, he opens up and he says, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth," which is the code that everybody knows, and they forget the last two words in this verse, "and master it." God says in Exodus 15:26, "I am the God, thy healer. All the illnesses that I have visited on the Egyptians, I shall not visit on you," and that's followed up immediately by the commandment, "he shall heal." And then he sums it up with this verse in Leviticus, "You cannot stand idly by. Make up your mind, God, you are the healer, or I am the healer." And he says, in summation, that we have a really nice problem as voiced in the Talmud. The question was posed, is there not time when you say to the bee, "Neither your honey nor your sting"? Are we prepared to give up the honey for the genetic research because we are worried about the sting that there can be? Our duty is to respond. Cloning may be a methodology to do so. And so he supports it. In Islam, Dr. Aziz Shakhadina, University of Virginia, he basically says this, "Human creation is part of the divine will that determines the embryonic journey to the human creature. It allows for possible distinction between biological and moral persons because of the silence of the Quran over when ensoulment occurs. A majority of the Sunni and the Shiite scholars make a distinction between two stages of pregnancy divided by the end of the fourth month, that is 120 days, when according to some traditions ascribed to the Prophet Muhammad, ensoulment takes place. Therefore, he agrees that you may clone. The classical formulations based on the Quran and tradition provide no universally accepted definition of the term embryo with which we are concerned in our deliberations today. Therefore, do it. Therefore, go ahead and clone. I want to share with you a few comments by Dr. Gilbert Mailander. I think what he has to say is where we are at. He says this: we have to come at the question of cloning indirectly, then starting from that point, not in a direct point. It's from the vantage point of this connection that our theological tradition has addressed a question that is profound but mysterious in its simplicity. And he goes on with this, something that you will read in Ramsey and other places, O'Donovan, the meaning, what is the meaning of child and what is good for a child? And so he has many things to say about this. He said the possibility of human cloning is striking in one sense only because it breaks the connection so emphatically between a husband and a wife. Marriage and parenthood are connected, held together in a basic form of unity. The child is, therefore, a gift, one like them who springs from their embrace, not being whom they have made and whose destiny they should determine. Leon Cass was there. He said the same thing. He was really strong. He said this is all narcissism. This is just like Narcissus, who stood in front of the mirror and stayed there till he starved to death. He did not have any kind word. Gil Mailander closed. He said, consider the best interests of children, and I would really, though it is not coming to the end of my presentation, he said, I would like to stop that you people consider what does it mean that child is gift. So from our perspective, when we get into the clonal identity, our Christian identity, with the advent of Dolly Clone, we see another great paradigm shift from the 6,000-year-old procreation wherein Adam knew Eve, and that wasn't, hi Eve, what's for supper, to the 19-year-old test tube procreation of Louise Brown in 1978, to the 1-year-old replication of sheep. And people say, hey, there's a choice we have now. It's a bigger choice. The world and society, not that there's much different these days, would choose that they believe is best in a utilitarian approach to the self. Robert Bork says in his book, Slouching Towards Gomorrah, radical individualism in our time attacks the authority of family, church, and private association. The family is said to be oppressive, the fount of miseries, especially procreating children that are defective. If this self could be changed from defective or to perfective, then cloning would be the way to go in society that continues to suffer from radical individualism and autonomy, and looking at their identity based on what they have succeeded in and not what they have been given and blessed with by the Lord God, the Creator and Giver of His grace. So if the self is happy, then those around the self are equally happy. This is lived out and seen in children when you say to your children, go ahead, if that's going to keep you happy, do it. And we find this more and more in society today. The next overhead sort of speaks to that issue, just came out of the O'Fallon newspaper, credit card reproduction, where this is on sale, come in, we'll set you up. The Riverfront Times every week has an article very similar to this that's run by a physician and a veterinarian. So I understand the issues of infertility are very sensitive. And we pastors are always very sensitive to that. Not putting that down, I do not understand all of the nuances. I certainly appreciate it, having dealt with many couples in this area. But it is certainly an area that we need to address, and we need to address from husband, wife, procreation, what does the Lord say in the Scriptures about barrenness, and so forth. Well, while I do not support the cloning, while I do not oppose the cloning of DNA for the benefit of humankind in the diagnosis, the treatment, and the prevention of genetic disorders, I personally do not support using genetic replication to make humans. We Lutherans, I believe, are great at saying, we are great at saying what we oppose, but sometimes we say, well, we shouldn't say anything. I've experienced this. Well, we don't have an official position yet. I don't think this takes an official position. Personally, I suppose we get into this meet right and salutary. What does this mean? We know what this means. Clonal identity is based on the integrity of its genetic parents and the environment. They want to reproduce. And so from the perspective of the old Adam, those who would seek to clone themselves or another to propagate their species, as they say, or replace a deceased loved one, have progenerated a product, a eureka, a child, by design and intention that will be loved, certainly, not because of what they have been given, but because of what they have. The twin looks just like the genetic donor. This mindset of genetic hubris is packaged around transgressing the first commandment. The hubris of cloning self may meet a need, but I do not see any other way through the quagmire of self-aggrandizement than through idolatry of self, that is, the elevation of godliness, of being a godlike person. Wherein a child is gift, we talk about would it be a child in the procreative meaning of begotten, wherein a child is gift, given and made by the Creator. So our Christian identity, when we speak of this, we focus on our Christian identity within the new covenant that Christ gives to us in baptism and reaffirms in the Lord's Supper, as Luther writes in the Lord's Catechism, the Lord's Supper, which aids and quickens us in both soul and body. Thus, in the theology of the cross, we cling to the cross by faith alone and not to our experiences of infertility, childlessness, suffering, dying, and other difficult problems we face in our life. Meaning is something that we determine by our own individualism and autonomy when we set ourselves apart from the Lord. Therefore, what would be meaningful for me, I can determine. It's a self-determinism. We Lutheran Christians find meaning of life in the gospel of life, Jesus Christ, as Dr. Kolb wrote in his book on baptism. From the foot of the cross, we see how wrong we were, no matter how well we behaved, because we did not love and trust in Yahweh above all things. We witness to the God who calls us to trust Him and bestows our new identity in this trust. So rather than looking to yourselves for answers for the perplexing issues of human cloning and the fear and dread it conjures up, we are reminded that we stand in the presence of God. He has put His mark on us through the waters of holy baptism. Our identity is much, much more than in our genes. It is the righteousness of God by grace through faith on account of Christ alone. Therefore, we view adult human cloning as idolatrous making of self and not the begetting of a child through the giving and receiving of love. The begetting is equality. Making, that's a problem because it talks about the difference that the maker makes and then the thing that is made. Well, this mid-central couple that sat in this clinic called Clonegenics, what are they going to do? Indeed, this couple has entered into adult human cloning and the art of selling self and also of selling self, S-E-L-L-I-N-G. That is the latter of selling in the context that their clone is now a product, a commodity. This is a self-marketing concept under the old Adam, which will continue to perpetuate self over the Savior who died and rose for the justification of self. So the clone's identity is going to be based on characteristics and attributes. That's what's coming down the pike. Clonal identity would be based on, in this case, the phenotype, the attributes exhibited by the clone are clones, meaning that the parents may choose to have two sons cloned, one acting now but so designated, maybe one down the road for spare parts. One does not know. And soon you will see this movie called Cloned, which very basically says all of these kids are running around and the parents are just beside themselves. What have we done? So any serious, as Gil Mylander says, any serious Christian evaluation of the use and place of medical research in the life of a Christian must come to grips with the sinful tendency towards idolatry. We can make, and probably have made, an idol of medical advance. End of quote. Therefore, identity resting on clonal self and the characteristics which it possesses, as opposed to Christian identity and the gift of the Spirit given at baptism, will continue to list self over and against the Savior and what we have been given by God in Christ, namely salvation by grace through faith alone. Baptism gives us our identity into the death of Christ and not self. Baptism goes after the clonal issue of identity, as in the case of the mid-central couple who seek to control their son's identity with them and their family as a replacement child. Cloning robs the child of its Christian identity through the possession of certain characteristics, whereas baptism gives the Christian its identity based on water, word, and faith. Dr. Kolb writes again, baptism is indeed a change from one state to another. It is the change from death to life. It is repentance in the sense of the ancient Hebrew, a being turned from idolatry to faithfulness in the company of God. Thus, baptism is the Christian's response to those who would seek to sell self, C-E-L-L and S-E-L-L. We now have a new committee here. I would just like to posit with you, we now have a bioethics panel of cloning here at Concordia Seminary, just so the Lamb is included, so we do not forget what happened in the past. Thank you. Any replicative questions? Yes. How are you doing?
How are you doing?
Good.
Okay. Thank you very much for bringing us up to date on this. And I was wondering, in your presentation, you kind of began with the history of some of the experimentation from 66 onward.
Yes.
And I was wondering, to what extent does this research stand upon the experimentation, say, of Nazi Germany and or other countries of that time, and what might be the ethical implications of building upon such work?
That's precisely what people are fighting against, and that's why that in that journal Der Spiegel, they go after that of what happened in Nazi Germany and Hitler and what he was doing in his eugenic experimentations. So this is something that, even though this has happened way in the past, people are saying, no, this is not the same thing. We're going to guise this in helping humanity. We're going to do this for the good and welfare of people. We are going to help couples, and to be quite frank, the top reason is, who cannot have a child. So, and they have a need, as Oliver Donovan says in Begotten or Made, and Dr. Mylander reemphasizes that, they want one of their own, so we can provide them with one of their own. And that negative eugenics in the sense of creating people for spare parts, improving the population, basically is outlawed, but that's, I don't think it's going to prevent it. Sinful man is sinful. But it is built on that. But I still think, you know, have we really learned from the past? Any other questions?
A couple of years ago, I attended a presentation at which it was discussed the downfall of the modern university in addressing the moral implications of issues such as this. It seems like we're scrambling after the fact to try to come up with the moral arguments around cloning, even though 10 years ago, the community, the university community, knew that cloning was going to be possible within 20 years. What kinds of issues should we be looking at to preemptively come up with moral theological groundwork for now?
From my perspective, we tend to be reactive as theologians, as pastors. These things happen. Even though we hear about them, we tend to say, oh, that's never going to happen. And so we kind of sit off in the weeds and kind of wait, and then something happens and we run out into the field. And then we start to plan. I don't think sometimes that's all that bad to be a bit reactive, because in our reactivity, we tend to be proactive. We tend to say, well, this is what's happening, and we would say, regarding, from our perspective as Lutherans, dealing with the means of grace, dealing with how does all of this play in with the doctrine of justification, what Dr. Preuss wrote about in his paper that I referenced. What we need to be honing in on in a proactive way, I think, goes right back to Genesis. We need to be honing in on, what is the gospel all about? For example, you know, when the Ten Commandments were given, we have this gospel. I, the Lord your God, the God of Abraham, out of Egypt, brought you out of Egypt. I brought you out of Egypt. Now, you will not. It's not something I have to get up every morning and kind of think about doing. It's there. And so I believe in our proactive way, we don't have to change what we're doing and say there's got to be some other magic formula here. This is not some magic formula we're dealing with. It's just what we always do well, and we talk about God's Word and all of its truth and purity. And the Holy Spirit will provide the words. I don't know if this is getting at, you're looking for something more concrete, aren't you? Yeah, and all I'm saying to you is you talk about what is the meaning of human life, but you do it from the cross, period. And that's what you do. And people are going to say, oh, come on, I've heard that over and over and over again. Then keep doing it. That's what you keep doing.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
When you showed us that chart of the actual cloning process,
yes,
you mentioned the importance that some of those mammary cells were still activated, or we didn't know if they were deactivated.
Yes.
Can you explain what the significance
yes.
of that is?
The significance of activation and inactivation is this. When they put these mammary cells into a solution that has really no nutrients, and it's basically isotonic saline, I mean, there's nothing there to feed the cells, and you need to feed cells if they're going to multiply and divide and to grow. And so they basically starve them into thinking, I mean, I say that in single quotes, such that they are at ground zero. That is, there are 46 chromosomes. And even though those cells, when they're activated, would say, I'm going to make another mammary gland if some mammary glands get rubbed off or scraped off, see, then this is what I'm going to do. But they deactivate that part that says, oh, I'm not a mammary gland. When they put it into the egg, it recognizes itself as, at ground zero, as a fertilized egg. And now they know from science and scientific research that the cytoplasm within the egg is very important, because they have developed a new technology now where they're taking cytoplasm out of eggs that are very young, like women that in their 20s, and they're taking that cytoplasm out, putting them into women with older fertilized eggs, and finding it works better. See? More manipulation. Is this? Because the activation part, when it gets into the egg, it activates itself, it reads itself as a fertilized egg. Before that, it reads itself as just nothing. Just 46 chromosomes, and I'm just here, and I haven't been turned on to do what I'm supposed to do.
So the problem would be the manipulation here.
Yeah, the problem would be it isn't complete activation in some cases where some of these lambs were born with missing parts, body parts. That part of the DNA structure, there's 1.8 meters of DNA in every cell in your body. It's a lot of DNA. It's almost 6 feet. And one part would say, this part's going to be coded for a foot. And it didn't get activated. No foot.
So likely those problems came about from the starving of the egg at that
yes.
point.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Dr. Bartelt.
Bob, I don't want you to defend somebody else's bad exegesis, but I'm curious. You quoted a Jewish
yes.
source of the Genesis passage
yes.
in arguing, I think, the point was, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth, and subdue it, have dominion,
yes.
lord it over, or however you're going to translate that.
Yes.
Or how do you get from that, in his argumentation, to cloning's okay?
Well, from his perspective, when I heard him, Darfur, speak, it was simply a matter, he used the word mastery. Since we are given that responsibility to have master over all and to continue the lineage, this was the other issue I didn't mention. If there is a family and they do not have a child and they need to continue the lineage of their name, then we have the right to have mastery over that, to clone a child, to keep the line of that family going. Yeah, well, that's what he said.
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
I'll give you his
by
email.
The connection of that
yes.
verse to the image of God.
Exactly.
Business.
Yeah, it doesn't connect.
Lost. Yeah.
It's lost.
Right.
Because as I understand, when it's creating our image, it's so that they may have dominion.
Well, yeah.
But there's a lot of mischief
that's come out of that passage.
Yes.
And it's interesting that it comes up again. That was just
And both of the rabbis that were there both agreed that this was to be something of a mastery issue with them.
Yeah. Okay.
And we like science, and we're not enemies of science, so let's do it.
I may have missed something when you said that ensoulment, the whole issue of ensoulment, wasn't very important, at least to our discussion right here. But in my non-medical trained mind, that's the issue that I keep coming back to. And my thought process is running something like this, that in the abortion debate, the pro-life movement seems to rest on the sanctity of human life, which is based on man having a soul or being created in the image of God, whatever that is defined to be. And in at least following the Roman Catholic tradition, ensoulment kind of takes place, at least as far as I understand it, at the moment of conception, where you have two different set of genetic materials coming together to form a new set of genetic material. But with cloning, we don't have that. You've got genetic material that's whole in and of itself being put in to an incubator for all practical purposes. And so the whole issue of ensoulment would seem to be very important to me as we try to determine, A, the status of this life form and what we're going to do with it. I mean, as far as using it for parts, or if we're going to see it as a person. So the whole issue of identity comes into this thing, too. Could you speak on that a little
bit? Yes. Yeah, I said it, I don't believe it's the most important question, for the scriptures speak little about the soul. Trying to read Luther, he says little about the soul. I tend to believe he was he would posit an issue of traducianism, that once it came into Adam and Eve, it was passed on that way from parent to parent to parent, and not the creationist, that every time a child is created, God posits soul in that child. My point is this, that if we make the focal point the soul, I personally believe a clone would have soul. Flesh begets flesh. It has 46 chromosomes, and if they come off of a mammary gland of a woman or a man, those genes that are there are actually the genes from that lady's parents. Okay? That child is actually a twin of that mother. It's not the child of the mother in this circumstance. So in that case, I would say that it would. I wouldn't know if I were talking to anyone in here if they were a clone, short of them telling me that. And so, but my responsibility is to plant the seed and to water it. I think talking about whether a clone has a soul and all of this certainly gets into the areas of evolution, because evolutionists would say, no, you don't have to worry about that. I mean, it's part of what we need to be, and is an important issue to discuss. But from my perspective, I believe the more important issue is the salvation of that person we would call a clone. And I think there's still a lot of room for debate on that. I think we can question the humanity of a clone. I do not think a fertilized egg, a conceptus, is the same thing as taking a somatic cell and taking that DNA out and putting it into an egg and saying that's a conceptus. Because we're not involving, that's why the clone rights front, the gay front, said, hey, we don't need men anymore, and you do not need men in cloning. So from that perspective, I think that it is helpful to discuss it, but from where we're coming from, as pastors, we can talk about it, but I would not like to make the soul the object of salvation for an individual. Christ is that object. Jim?
Importantly, a lot of our discussion of this issue is about how to advise the scientific community and how to help with our society and so forth in the current circumstances. I think one practical pastoral sort of question we're likely to run into if the genie is out of the bottle is that if Louise Brown were to come to my congregation seeking baptism, I don't have any trouble, though she's the first test tube baby,
yes,
knowing I'm dealing with a human being, and we proceed as we would. And I think we want to have done sufficient thinking so that if 20 years hence we are ministering to some individuals who have, through whatever ways of continuing medical science, been produced through this means rather than through what we rightly argue seems to be what God's Word suggests ought to be, we want to be prepared to be able to deal with human beings in appropriate ways in our ministry, which may mean we need to do more thinking along the lines you were suggesting about the meaning of what it is to be human and how our talk about soul and so forth fits into that, and be able then also to relate that to what Christ has done for all humanity.
Yeah, and I think what Dr. Bachman is bringing up, you know, people have asked me if a clone came to me, would I baptize a clone? So now, is it the cloning that becomes the object of the baptism? So prophecy. I mean, these are things that we need to continue to address. And I do believe, you know, when we talk about what is the meaning of human life, I personally don't believe, as a scientist, that science can address that. They think they can. They can. When we do science, knowledge, we learn how God has fearfully and wonderfully put us together. But I believe when we talk about the meaning of human life, which Dr. Bachman is commenting on, that we need to be very, very careful in our study and go back to the basics of what we are here about doing. So that's why I know with Dr. Bachman, the issue of baptism is also very important in dealing with these issues when Christians come before you, especially in the area of abortion and euthanasia and infanticide and all these things that are all connected. They are not disconnected. So, any other comments or questions? Yes.
I was wondering about, and I'm sure this isn't possible yet, but down the road it may be. You mentioned that the cell, wherever, whatever gland or whatever it's taken from, still has the information to produce itself as that gland.
Yes.
And I was wondering about the possibility and the implications of instead of creating a whole person and using that person as spare parts, using those cells, not removing the information they have to create that specific organ, to create organs for transplant without creating a whole new person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are looking into that in terms of transgenic manipulation, xenotransplantation issues, where they are trying to generate, you know, well, they are generating human genes in animals, but to get that gene then to produce a liver or a spleen, they have to ask a lot of other medical questions, because although one cannot live without the liver, you can certainly live without the spleen. That some people may say, and I'm not sure where I'm at with this yet either, in terms of should we permit the use of human genes in animals, we do this already in many cases, to produce certain pharmaceutical drugs that would be good for therapy and drug treatment. I think in general I would not have a problem with that, as long as we are good caretakers and stewards of the animals we're working with, that we don't start poking holes in their brains and giving them shots and mimicking Alzheimer's and these kinds of things. That I personally is a bit repulsive to me. Initially I would say that we have to investigate why would we want to do this, and frame it in our theology in the context of why would we want to do this. We keep pushing this and pushing this. I mean, the technology that is there, there are more than 25 ways to conceive a child right now. You can sit down when you know and just map this out. Just in vitro, intracytoplasmic sperm injection. You've got the possibility, maybe unlikely probability, that you could have an adult human clone in that technology. You have artificial insemination. You have GIFT. You have ZIFT. You have all of this technology, and you have sperm and egg donor. Sherman Silver out here at St. Luke's West says, hey, you want a baby? I can get you one no matter how you want it, regardless. And I think the issue that I know Dr. Gil Mylander spends a lot of time on in his books that he writes in this area, addressing it more frequently now, about the issue of going outside of your body in terms of conception, the embodiment issue, where people want to continue to separate the body from the person, where he would say, excuse me, the person is part of our human. We don't, you know, when did the person enter, as he would say in this book, Bioethics, Primer for Christians. When did this enter? Well, many people would say, well, when you're sentient, when you can be aware of your surroundings, when you have characteristics and attributes. And Steinbach says, she says, well, when you have interests, hobbies, then you can be declared a person. See? And that's why this phrase pre-embryo causes me so much heartburn, not just as a theologian, but certainly as a scientist. It's an absolute ridiculous phrase. It is there so they can experiment up to day 14. That's bottom line from my perspective. Pre-embryo. What does that mean? Came from an amphibian embryologist. Maybe that's where the Budweiser commercials came from. Frog, you know. So, any other? Yes, one more question.
My question is related to Dr. Bachman's.
Good.
When it's time for baptism, what is the difference between the child who is going to be baptized to be given their identity, who has lost their identity in sin, and the child who has lost their identity through cloning? Is there a difference there?
In terms of characteristics, that's the difference right there.
Yeah.
But I still would believe that that child or clone would still be sinful.
They still need the identity given them, yes, in baptism.
And this would be something that some people would say, how could you baptize a clone? Well, come and watch. And then if I'm going to err, as we all talk about erring on the side of the gospel, then the Lord will talk to me. And I don't say that flippantly. And I'm not saying that's something we just, oh, well, it's no big deal, just baptize everybody. No, no. It still is something, like Dr. Bachman is addressing, that we need to continue to look into. And we will continue to do this until he calls all of us to heaven, and then those who follow will do this. Yes. Oh, one more. Oh, getting up. Anything else? I guess that's all, Dr. Smith.